Welcome to Drum Machine Joy, the new air season day of Blue Collar Love. My name is Samuel, and help me feel something within yourself that gives me worth and cheers me. Help me feel something, Aaron. Oh, man. Okay. So Drum Machine Joy, that's what we're going to go with here. And hopefully you guys got a chance to listen to our interview that we just did with Ronnie. I posted that before this. If you didn't, go back and listen to it. It will give you so much context for this episode. But we are doing the very first Tooth & Nail release by Joy Electric, a.k.a. Ronnie Martin, 1994's Melody. Yes, yes, it is. Might be five on a good day. So, Ronnie Martin produced, recorded everything on this. It is worth noting, though, uncredited is Bob Moon, who produced vocals, which when we interviewed Ronnie, he did briefly mention that he went in and recorded the vocals separate. So, the old standby Bob Moon helped record vocals. So, yeah, that's kind of cool. Yeah, let's just go ahead and we'll talk about album artwork and then we'll hop right into this mess. And, all right, that sounds like fun. So with Ronnie, we tried not to give our opinion too much. We just let him do all the talking, and it was still a ridiculously long episode. So now we're just going to talk about our opinions, because we know that's, you guys don't come here to listen to interviews with Ronnie. You know, you guys come here to listen to us. That's what this podcast is really about, is us. Me and Aaron's thoughts. I mean, you know, sometimes we have guests that you guys appreciate or something. I don't know. You guys come for that and the LaCroix, because I know everyone's sipping a can along with me. All right. Track number one, Drum Machine Joy. Aaron, tell me about Drum Machine Joy, the title of our new air, if you will. So we get to start off with some lo-fi bleeps and bloops. And I noticed that this happens a lot, and I'll talk about it later, but we get the title of the song as a kind of pre-chorus. He just opens up with Drum Machine Joy. And really, this song tells you everything you need to know about Joy Electric. Like, if you want to, especially early Joy Electric, I would say everything up through Robot Rock probably. So if you ever want, So really, I think if someone's like, what does Joy Electric sound like? Just play them Drum Machine Joy. It tells them everything they need to know. Yeah. So bubbly lo-fi electronic soundscapes, with kind of like Narnia tinged lyrics. Ronnie did talk about how much, you know, Narnia influenced him, like all the kids. But you can definitely hear that. Huh? Us included, right? Which I think it is kind of cool how you have like this kind of medieval setting of the lyrics juxtaposed against the, at the time, this would have been kind of a futuristic sound. So I think that's kind of a cool idea. You have like these kind of medieval old timey lyrics. To a degree, I can see that, yeah. Also, Drum Machine Joy being used as a metaphor for finding joy in old things. I think it's kind of a cool idea, because Ronnie did say, you know, he liked the idea of old things, like a drum machine at that point. And finding the love of God, or finding love in an ancient God, is kind of a cool idea. I don't know if he meant it exactly that way, but that's how I kind of take it. You know, you find joy in an old drum machine. You find joy and love in an ancient God. So it's just the perfect introduction. And, you know, although I will have feelings and things to say about other parts of this album, I think it's a really, really strong opener as well. That is a mouthful. I think Joy Electric, in many ways, is proto-emo. And what I mean by that is, like, the sad lyrics, but also, if you remember the 2000s, emo music had this thing where they would have, like, sentence-long titles. It was just a thing. And, you know? And I think more of them than would like to admit was totally influenced by Joy Electric. Or they were all drinking from the same Kool-Aid at the time. I don't know. Yeah. All right. This one certainly sounds playful, which is fitting for a title that includes toy company. Right. So the opening does kind of give you like, it reminds me of, I used to have this, this Namco Museum, CD for my PlayStation 1. And on it, there was this game called like Toy Box or something to that effect. I can't remember exactly what it's called. It was just a really old school Namco game, but that's what this song reminds me of. Not even the soundtrack to that game, just that game in general. I hear this and I think of that kind of aesthetic, old school blocky 8-bit characters. I like the main synth line that kicks after the chorus, but I do have to add the background sounds a bit busy on this, like it's doing too much in the background. And then the lyrics fall into kind of the silly love song category, which I'm always a fan of. I will talk more about silly love songs as we go on later. But, you know, it's a pleasant follow-up song. I don't feel like it does anything that like goes crazy other than the first song was a Jesus song and this one's a silly love song. Other than that, they both play to similar strengths. All right, tell me about Candy Cane Carriage. I think this song picks up very well where the last song lets off. In fact, if you weren't paying attention, you could be forgiven for thinking it's like just a continuation of the same song. I think some of that may have been on purpose. Some of that may have been the limitations of Ronnie talks about in that interview, how he recorded all this like on two tracks and then had to like condense it all down. So I think some of that may be the limitations of he's working with very limited recording equipment directly to cassette. But still, it's a cool transition. I like it. However, by the time we get into the chorus, this quickly turns into a dance song, with what I'm pretty sure is the ever reliable 120 beats per minute. So most dance songs are 120 beats per minute because, you know, for whatever reason, that's the speed at which we jump. Go figure. I'm pretty sure that I don't have any evidence, but I'm pretty sure that's what this song is. I also love that the verses, like if you just read the verses, they're a silly love song, right? But then you get to the chorus and it says, "What can I feel when you break my heart in pieces?" And it's like this great juxtaposition of, you know, happy, lovey-dovey verses. And then the chorus is like a twist almost. It's like the Shyamalan twist before Shyamalan was a thing. Where it's like, oh, but wait, actually, she broke my heart. And I just, that's brutal. I love it. So, this one is definitely, once again, in that kind of emo category, I think. I could easily hear this song, even with its quirky lyrics, I could hear this being covered by, like, Dashboard Confessionals or something. Easily. All right, moving right along to Analog Grand Diary. I love that wonky synth line that opens this song. It's interesting, if nothing else. It just sounds distorted and weird, and then it settles into kind of a music box melody. Like, if you played the melody of this song, like, on a music box that was out of tune, it would fit right into a horror movie. It would just sound so creepy. And these lyrics, I'm going to talk about this more. These lyrics are of the classic, what I call, "God, I'm a sinner and I hate myself" variety. Specifically the line, "For all that you see, I'll never like me." And I have no doubt that these lyrics are sincere because they're the exact same lyrics I myself have like written or saying about many, many, many times in my life. So they certainly speak to a certain authenticity. With that said, I think these lyrics also speak to a certain immaturity in your faith. the inability to give yourself grace, and more importantly, to accept the grace of God. You know, just, I'll never like myself, and I'm not sure I can ever be forgiven. It's something that I feel like as you mature more in your faith and your walk with God, I won't say you grow out of it, because you always have those moments, and this song might just be speaking to a moment, but I think it's something that you kind of learn to check yourself and be like, wait, you know, grace is sufficient, you know, where sin doth abound, grace doth much, much more abound. We can get through this. With all that said, these are also three words in a 4-minute pop song. I'm probably reading way too deep into this, especially when Ronnie said he spent like 30 seconds on the lyrics. So that's my thought. Yeah, exactly. Fair enough. All right, tell me about how every boy and girl falls in love. I'm glad you like this song. So, okay, this song reminds me a bit of Dance House Children. It has that old school house sound. And I'm, once again, what I'm pretty sure is 120 beats per minute. And while the course is catchy, I'm personally glad this isn't the direction that Joy Electric ultimately went with, because I personally find this type of music a little boring after the first minute. It's after that sheer repetition after 60 seconds, just like you were saying the other day, that how much you didn't like, oh man, why did the name Daft Punk? Now, and I don't prefer Daft Punk's early work, because this is exactly what it is. Just super repetitive music. And I get bored with that after a minute, like literally after 60 seconds. I'm not saying there's no merit in it, and I can understand the skill, and I can understand maybe like a moment in time. But for me personally, where I'm at in life, it just doesn't hit me that well, you know? Yeah? Okay, I appreciate that. See, and you have to remember, that's a German house music from 20 years ago. It's probably a little bit different now. All right, let's talk about The Girl from Rosewood Lane, another one of my favorites. Such a pretty synth line that opens up the song. And it definitely makes you feel like you're entering a fairy tale setting. A sad emo song, which I've already said I love, but with the aesthetic of Hansel and Gretel in space. If Hansel and Gretel was in space, it'd be this song. It's mostly a pleasant listen, especially because I love sad songs. So I love the lyric. And time will tear us apart, words can't heal the ending. And time has torn us apart, don't forget the beginning. It's really a poetically, beautifully, and ultimately hopeful lyric for such a sad-sounding song. So I really love it for that. And if you want further analysis of relationships, go listen to our Bon Voyage episodes. It's probably, I'm trying to think of like a pop star that was really big, but maybe wouldn't have been big in the 90s. I don't know. I can't think of anyone. Some. Well, no, I'm like a female pop singer that Ronnie may have dated in the 90s that went on to go on to be huge. But alas, Gwen Stefani, that's who it was. Actually, I could, in their early days, I could see them traveling in some of the same circles, honestly. So, tell me about it. Tell me about it. All right. I will say this up front. I wish I could have been this lyrically creative at 20 years old. Ronnie absolutely nails this kind of Studio Ghibli fairy tale aesthetic he's going for. And speaking as someone who has dabbled in writing lyrics for somewhere around 20 years, it is way harder to nail that aesthetic than you would possibly think. To make it like, to make catchy choruses, just lyrics alone, forget music, just writing lyrics that have catchy choruses and all make coherent sense and still follow a strict aesthetic is a real skill set. So I'm really impressed. I think, you know, having three albums behind him, the Rainbow Riders, two Dance House Children's, and I forgot Morella's Forest, all that kind of, he had four albums worth of songwriting, you know, skills built up. So it shouldn't be that surprising, but still I am impressed by that. The music for this song doesn't do a lot for me, sadly. I think we're getting to the point where I feel like I've already heard all these songs before, all these sounds. I do like Ronnie's little la 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 at the end. It just, that's kind of a cool sound, especially because it's kind of like ghostly sounding. But the rest of the song is kind of just meh. We're at track 7. Indeed. And so get out your notepad and make some tally marks now, because I'm not doing it for you. All right. Tell me about the melody book. So when I first read these lyrics, I thought they were going for a darkly subversive metaphor about a girl breaking your heart. I just read the first couple lines and it's, she sews little hearts and bakes a ginger boy. And I read that, I'm like, ooh, they're going for like a dark metaphor here. I love this. But then you keep reading and it's a total another silly love song. Which, in the words of the great poet Paul McCartney, what's wrong with that? The music, sadly, continues just to kind of meld into the background at this point. Like, I wish I had more to say, but the music just isn't doing much for me on this track. Fair enough. All right. Let's talk about Life Guardian 20. This one's short, but I like it. It's like, it reminds me a lot of, there is a track off of Silver. What am I thinking of? She Only Knows, one of my favorite tracks off of Silver. And this song reminds me of it a lot. So the wind blowing is a cool sound effect. The music on this one sounds distinctly like it belongs on a Sega Genesis game. Specifically when the credits are rolling at the end. Like, I can just hear this on a Sega Genesis game. I know, just that's what it sounds like to me. The lyrics are dead simple on this one, but after hearing Ronnie talk about the backstory, it makes me like the super short but sweet song. It's a sweet song. I like it. And the music is different enough that it breaks up kind of the monotony I've been feeling for the past couple songs. So I enjoy it a lot. All right, tell me about In Love in Midsummer, another kind of middle transition track, if you will. Which I think that's kind of cool that it ends on Life Guardian 20 and then starts on, because they're both good transition songs. That almost sounds like it'd be a perfect single vinyl, like just like a perfect album if it was only one vinyl. Sorry, continue. So, I can definitely hear the backward tracking here, which is always an interesting effect when you hear it. It's really cool as the middle of the album transition. I wish this wasn't just the middle of the album. I wish this was the end of the album. or at least a transition to the end of the album, or something. I don't know. I just, this, we're kind of crossing the point for me where there is just too many songs for me. And I get it. Like, even Ronnie talked about, said a couple times, he felt like there was too many songs in here. So, like, you know, you're making your first album, you just want to get everything out there. I get it. I just, on an artistic level, it just kind of bugs me. Also, I think he mentioned this was sampling an Enya song, I think. So, well, I could see this one being the sample because it's played backwards, so you couldn't tell. All right, tell me about Never Be a Star. Oh, sorry. So we get some almost shoegaze level distorted guitars here, I think. At least it sounds like distorted guitars. Which, if nothing else, I appreciate how it shakes up the formula used thus far. So I wish this album wasn't 18 songs, but if it has to be 18 songs, now's the time to shake things up a little bit. So I appreciate that. The heavy beat gives this an almost industrial sound mixed with some of the kind of the house sounds we heard earlier in the album. And like I said previously, that's not my favorite sound in the world, but I appreciate that it shakes up the album. Also, the music matches the lyrics. And speaking of lyrics, these are probably some of the most brutal lyrics thus far on the album. Once again, in my head, at least, this is kind of a prayer to God. As the song says, in confusion and loneliness, which is, you know, it's certainly relatable. You know, in confusion and loneliness, I'm reaching out to you. But once again, I do find it interesting that the self-depreciating lyrics are once again in relation to God. I remember feeling that way all the time growing up, but it does kind of speak to that. Why is the self-depreciating lyrics only in relation to God? What kind of relationship, what kind of mental state does that tell you about that person? And I get it. Like, that's exactly how I was when I was 16. But still, it's an interesting note. And that's fair. Fair enough. And maybe I'm just reading more into it because of my own teenage angst, but yes. All right. Ooh, okay. Okay, so when I write the biography, so the biography has to be both of them at the same time? That's not a bad idea. But if it was both of them, I could get a 500-page book out of it. Okay, I'll keep... So I feel like after he made Never Be a Star, there was like some part of that or like a loop from that or something where he's like, it doesn't quite go with Never Be a Star, but I'm going to kind of spin it off into its own song. That's how, I feel like it came from like the same session, if you will. 'Cause you're right. It's a little brother, a little cousin. The distortion of the last song does return here. This time I feel like it's played through the synths instead of on a guitar. And once again, the lyrics are brutal sounding, though this time the mood is just played as a general exhaustion, which once again, that's super relatable. I do get that. And you're right. The old at this young is like the perfect Martin Brothers biography name. Like it describes both of them so well. That blue collar family, man. So I don't have much to say about this song other than you're right. It just kind of continues on from the last one and it exists, you know, it's not bad, but it doesn't like grab my head or anything. So it's nice after two depressing songs in a row, we get a return to the upbeat, silly love song that Joy Electric does so well. I don't have a lot to say about this one, though. With that said, I feel like we've already heard this three other times. It just feels it feels redundant at this point. It sounds like all the other Electric Joy toy company, Every Boy and Girl Falls in Love, Sweet Sweet Charity, The Melody Book. I'm not saying it's a one-to-one comparison. I'm just saying we've heard songs like this already. No, never. Well, other than Old at This Young and maybe Dark Ages, yeah. Like they're like the dark trilogy, but we'll talk about that later. Happiness in Life. It's a really fun loop at the beginning of the song. I've noticed a trend with some of these songs, the more poppy songs specifically. It opens with an interesting loop or synth. Then he sings the chorus or a part of the chorus before going into the verse, and then going back into the chorus. It's not a bad formula. In fact, this is the songwriting pop song formula that's been used for the past 60 years. Like literally, it is the exact pop song formula. And I just find it interesting that he's using this very formulaic pop song structure in like these weird songs. It's a fun thing to notice. Hey, nothing wrong with pop music. I noticed. It's nice to have I feel like this is a God song, and it's nice to have one that isn't self-depreciating. The lyrics, "You bring me happiness in life, you take my sadness into your hands." It's a bit cheesy, but it's a cheesy that works for me. This song, I feel like, works a little bit better than the last song, honestly. Crowder Band. Fair enough. All right, tell me about Lily Pad Forest, Our Home. Something. I think it's fitting on a song named Lilypad that the intro sounds a bit like jumping, like leapfrogs, like in an analog kind of abstract way. I just hear frogs leaping over each other on this in the soundscape. Also, I'm I don't know if this was done on purpose though, but the song's title is Lily Pad, like the name Lily, as opposed to L-I-L-Y pad. So I don't know if he was purposely referencing like a girl, like, you know, a girl you're my home, Miss Lily, or something like that. Or if it was just a typo. I don't know. It's a fun thought. Ooh, you know, they have never, that I'm aware of, written a song about their mom, and I don't understand how. Well, and I do like the lyrics. If you chase the carol of Heather Fawn, I'll keep you safe from witch's harm. It's just a fun lyric. Happy Groundhog's Day. We haven't had one that random in a while, but be hoping. I'll go because this one's short and it feels fitting for me because I have a bunch of carpenter bees that love to live on my porch. So I walked out my porch this afternoon and there were like 6 bees just buzzing everywhere. Just big fuzzy bees. A little bit, yeah. They just love eating my porch. Like, my porch is in shambles because of them. For the sake of switching things up, we move into kind of a reggae beat. For better or for worse, what this beat reminds me of is those preset rhythms on an old Casio keyboard. I don't know if you had one of those when you were a kid, but like these really cheap $30 Casio keyboards that have like these preset rhythms you could play. And I'm pretty sure this exact rhythm was on there. The rest of the song is pretty meh to me. It exists. I don't care that much about it. What it reminds me of more than anything other than the Casio keyboard is Five Iron Frenzy. They have what's called the Pants Opera on one of their albums. And the Pants Opera uses all these preset beats, and one of them is a reggae song. And this song makes me think of it. But other than that, that's all I got. All right. Returning to a similar sound and aesthetic, both lyrically and musically, as Never Be a Star. However, there is a difference in that there's less of a heavy rhythm. This song honestly sounds like someone took a track from Starflower 59 Silver and mixed it with a Joy Electric song. They just like took two separate tracks, threw them in a mixer and just spit out one track together. That's what this sounds like. I mean, I don't see any Jason Martin co-writing credits on this, but I'm just saying. The lyrics fall into that very honest, vulnerable, but at the same time kind of depressing sound of the other dark songs, the the No Star song and the Old Young song, Never a Star. So it just falls into similar territory as those other two songs. I will say, and I'll talk more about this in the next song, but as a penultimate track, it works pretty good. I like this as the second to last track. If, you know, there would have been eight less other songs besides it. So if this and the song after it were the last two songs, I think I could make a case for it, but we'll get there. Talk to me about the Dark Ages. All right, well, tell me about Buttercup Fairy Jamboree. Oh, I'm actually literally supposed to, Buttercup Fairy Jamboree. So, I like how this song, it goes against the last song, like how they contrast. You know, we get the super depressing song, and then we in despair, and then we follow that up with a happy, hopeful song. And mainly, that's my main case for this song, is because it follows Dark Ages. I like them as an ending. And if these two songs had come after something like Life Guardian 20, for instance, or even In Love in Midsummer, I would consider them pretty good endings to an album. I don't know. If I was to cut this album up a little bit, I would probably, trying to kind of look through the track list, I would probably like take out Love in Midsummer, and then Leave In, Never Be a Star, and then just end on probably, I don't know, Happiness in Life. And then just cut out everything else. That's probably what I would do. All right, so my final thoughts. This album is a lot. Just so, so much. For the most part, I appreciate Ronnie's dedication to the aesthetic he wanted to go for. This kind of stripped-down lo-fi production mostly works, and the lyrics are mostly very well put together. With that said, and Ronnie himself agreed with this, this album had no reason to be 18 tracks. It just leaves the album feeling like a lot of filler. Also, much like early Starflyer, I think with some time, this album could grow on me. I could see it, you know, Silver, I didn't love it at first, and, you know, it grew on me. So I could see this album growing on me for sure. So music, I give a 1.5. There are moments, 1.5 out of 3. So there are moments, you know, especially in the first half of the album, really strong moments, but not enough to justify much higher than 1.5. Lyrics, I give it 2. I think Ronnie goes for a specific aesthetic and he nails it. You know, I think some of the lyrics are a bit immature, but in an understandable, I'm still only 21 years old way. Yeah. So I understand it. But, you know, just because I can understand where they're coming from doesn't mean, like, it pushes them over, you know, the edge into great lyrics per se. They're good. A solid 2 out of 3. Overall, I give this album a 1.5. You know, it's a solid first album, but not necessarily, like, blowing my mind. So I give this album a 5 out of 9. If you did 2, 2.5, 2.5, that's 7. Fair enough. And, you know, like, it may grow on me, but I will say, even after Silver grew on me, it was still, like, in the bottom, I think, like, 10 or 5 or 10 of Starflyer albums for me. So, like, I'll be curious to see. I am really excited to go on this journey because I want to see how this album stacks up to Joy Electric albums, especially because I'm not as familiar with the rest of his catalog. So. Yeah. All right, all. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. And we will talk to you next time when we do the next album. Hi, as always, this has been a Brothers King Media production.